This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, a last-ditch attempt to save two idled paper mills in central and northern Wisconsin cleared a key legislative hurdle yesterday. We talked to one of the lawmakers who introduced the bill about why time may be running out on that effort. Now, Green Bay Packers head coach Matt LaFleur says Aaron Rodgers will start at quarterback this Sunday against the Seattle Seahawks, assuming he no longer has COVID-19 or lingering symptoms. We want to hear from you, your reaction, your take, your thoughts on the story about Rodgers, the Packers, and COVID that's been at the top of the sports news over the last week, especially here in Wisconsin. You can call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. His 10-day quarantine expires on Saturday. He missed last week's game against the Kansas City Chiefs after his positive test. The Packers lost that game 13-7. Rodgers has come under fire for being unvaccinated, and he's being accused of lying about his status after saying in August that he was, quote, immunized. Today he said on the Pat McAfee show that he should have been more clear.
Look, I shared an opinion that is polarizing. I get it. And I misled some people about my status, which I take full responsibility of, those comments. But in the end, I have to stay true to who I am and what I'm about. And I stand behind the things that I said. And I, you know, have a ton of empathy for people who have been going through the worst part of this pandemic, which has affected all of us in different ways.
Last week, Rodgers said the team knew about his status. He also explained why he sought ivermectin to protect himself from COVID. The CDC and other health organizations have said ivermectin is ineffective against the virus and that getting the vaccine is the best way to limit the spread of COVID. Now, according to People magazine, Rodgers is, quote, very upset about the backlash he's getting. Over the weekend, Prevea Health announced it was ending its partnership with Rodgers. Meanwhile, State Farm says it's standing by Rodgers, though it disagrees with some of his statements. Now it's your turn to weigh in at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about the way Aaron Rodgers handled the story about his vaccination status with the Packers, the NFL, and sports fans? What about his comments since he contracted COVID-19? Do you still consider yourself a fan or an ex-fan? Or is it all much ado about nothing? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Robin is with us in Cross Plains. Robin, hi.
Hey, I really like this idea of, you know, getting some information out there that's not talked about. I feel that Aaron Rodgers has really ruined part of his reputation as an upfront person. And he basically lied. He did not tell his administration for the Packers team that he was not vaccinated, that he was doing something different. And what he is using does cause infertility in men, which I find hilarious. The second part of my comment is that why the hell has the Packers not set up our team to be ready to go for any instance with backup quarterbacks? Why don't we have them playing in a game where we're slamming somebody to the ground and we've got the opportunity to let them have some time on the field? I don't understand that.
Robin, do you consider yourself less of a Packer fan or less of an Aaron Rodgers fan now than you did, say, 10 days ago?
His skill is there. I mean, he trained for a long time. I will give him all the credit that is due to this man. I just feel that he showed a side of his personality that was not clear to a lot of people. And I think a lot of people are just dismissing it in this state, and I don't think that's right. I enjoy watching him. He's a great player. I don't care either way that he is on the field, but he's taking a chance and he's making the rest of the team sick, just as we've seen over the last couple weeks.
Gotcha. Robin, thanks a lot for starting us off at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Lisa in Green Bay. Lisa, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I agree with the previous caller. He is a very talented individual, but he's also looked up to as a leader in the community, and I'm really disappointed in him for lying about being vaccinated. Ivermectin is not a vaccination for people to take. And that's it.
Lisa, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts. We're getting your reactions to the Aaron Rodgers vaccination story going on over this last week now. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to Yordis in Colfax. Yordis, hi.
Hi. I admired Aaron Rodgers so much when there was that change between him and Favre. He just handled things beautifully. He was so mature and so eloquent and decent, and just the evolution of his behavior and his attitudes as he's become more and more famous, more and more rich. I mean, to say that he's a critical thinker is like a slap in the face of every scientist, every epidemiologist, every nurse that has cared for a COVID patient. I mean, it's insulting to anyone who, you know, takes garlic when there's colds or tries to, you know, do everything they can to prevent illness, because most people are doing those things and taking the vaccination. His hubris is almost like he thinks he's a deity or something. It's sad and it's bizarre, to be honest.
Yordis, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Kate joins us now in Fox Crossing.
Hi. I think this is a great example of someone who may be book smart in one category and really dumb in another. So, you know, he's bright enough to go on Jeopardy and answer a lot of trivia questions, but he's not smart enough to take a vaccine that's approved, and he's now put other people in tremendous danger because the people that he plays with have small children who couldn't be vaccinated. So it shows me a lot about who he is as a leader, and I think he's got a great arm and he can throw the ball where he wants to and he can answer some questions on Jeopardy, but I don't think he's a good example of a leader because he took all the wrong paths on this vaccine thing.
Kate, thanks a lot for your call. We're getting your reactions to the Aaron Rodgers Packers COVID story over this last week. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. A lot of you have commented on the Ideas Network Facebook page on related news stories. Tom writes, why is his personal health the world's business? James says, all you people who defended his offseason, this is what you get. Brett says the reaction is cancel culture at its finest. And Ann says we are in the middle of a public health crisis. His choice not to vaccinate or mask endangered his teammates, coaches, those from opposing teams, and the sports media that covers him. Ann writes, he misled others to believe he was vaccinated and did not abide by all of the NFL protocols. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. You can also comment on those stories on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@wpr.org. Gerald says the team managers slash owners are just as complicit as he, Rodgers, is. There's absolutely no way management didn't know that he was unvaccinated. Gerald says he was putting people at risk this whole time with what Gerald calls his lies. Lines are full up. Here we go. Aaron is with us in Madison now. Aaron, hi.
Hey, how you doing? I just wanted to comment quick about the difference between vaccination and immunization. Mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers never lied about being vaccinated. He never said he was vaccinated. He said he was immunized, which are two different things. So I just want to make sure everyone on and all your listeners realize that there's a difference there between the two. And he never actually lied. Now, Joe Rogan obviously isn't a great, you know, representation of medical efficacy, but Aaron Rodgers never actually lied.
Thanks. Right, and Rodgers said he kind of acknowledged it was a little misleading in that quote we played earlier. He was asked if he was vaccinated. He said, "I'm immunized." I don't know. Some people have said it's splitting hairs. Aaron, not Aaron Rodgers. You, Aaron, what do you think?
Well, I just think that, you know, he let a lot of people down. He let me down. And, you know, a lot of folks would say we should have won that game the other day regardless. However, you know, I didn't see anything where Aaron Rodgers ever said he was vaccinated.
Gotcha. Thanks a lot for calling in, Aaron, at 800-642-1234. Christina joins us next in Kenosha. Christina, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring
up,
Christina?
Sorry. I guess my opinion is very unpopular, but I respect his choice and his decision, as I respect everyone around me to make their own choice, and I think it's pretty brave of him to stand on what his morals are. I don't think it's a slap in the face in healthcare workers. I don't believe that you can speak to his level of intelligence for making his own choice. I think that he has eloquently spoke about how he made the decision with his physician, and the choices he is making are backed by science. It's just different science that other people are reading. It doesn't make it right or wrong, and I think ultimately it should be a choice, and we shouldn't be chastising people and saying they're trying to kill other people. That's horrific and very unkind.
Christina, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Thanks for all of your calls. You can keep sharing your thoughts over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let us know. A lot of stories up there about this ongoing story. Now, a former interpreter for the U.S. Marines in Afghanistan says getting his family out of the Taliban-controlled country feels impossible after they were left behind during the U.S. withdrawal in August. As Hope Kerwin reports, the Wisconsin resident has memories of the Taliban taking over Afghanistan when he was a child and worries about his family's future.
For 2 weeks in October, Johnny could not reach his parents in Afghanistan.
Their phone was off, and I was a little bit worried about them.
Johnny Five is the nickname U.S. Marines gave him while he worked as an interpreter between 2010 and 2013. He now lives in Fitchburg, but he didn't want to use his real name to protect his family. Because Johnny and his brother worked as interpreters, his family was eligible to come to the U.S., but only two of his brothers made it into the Kabul airport during the American evacuation. 13 of his family members couldn't make it through the crowds. A spokesperson from the U.S. State Department said anyone eligible for the U.S. refugee admissions programs must be outside of Afghanistan to begin the process. The department recognizes leaving the country is, quote, extremely difficult. To Johnny, it seems impossible. Many of his family members' passports were destroyed at a Taliban checkpoint. Now they're in hiding.
We grew up in a place somewhere everybody knows us, you know, like our friends, our family, our relative, and the neighbors, and people who we went to school with.
They don't know which neighbors might tip off the Taliban to their connection to the U.S. military.
You won't even know that somebody reported you. They just come at night and they knock on your door and they just take you on a known location.
He says it all reminds him of one of his first experiences with the Taliban, shortly after they took over Afghanistan in 1996. Johnny guesses he was 5 or 6 at the time. He remembers his mother was tense and kept looking outside.
Here and there, she would throw out some words and saying like, oh, I feel like there's something going on outside and I feel like there's some people are coming. And we were like, we just didn't know. We had no idea what's happening.
Johnny remembers the sound of an explosion when a helicopter was shot down near their house. He says a neighbor came to check on them. The neighbor's father had been injured, and some soldiers agreed to drive him to the closest clinic. Johnny's mom decided it was time to leave, too. Johnny rode in the bed of a pickup truck driven by two Taliban fighters and remembers bodies lining the road.
Those are the moments I will never forget. You know, that's how I picture Taliban.
Johnny keeps wondering what his 7-year-old sister is experiencing as a new era of Taliban rule begins and how he can help his family flee. But those working to evacuate Afghans say getting people out of the country without outside assistance is highly unlikely. Zach Loyce is a former member of the Army Special Forces and is originally from Burlington, Wisconsin. He's been working with a group called Task Force Pineapple to evacuate Afghan allies.
Most of these individuals are people that we know personally. These are former combat interpreters of ours. These are former Afghan special forces.
Loy said the Taliban have control of the passport offices and the airports, making air travel a major risk for anyone who's considered a high-value target. And that's just one of the hurdles.
They can't work, so the funding is a major issue. They're being hunted, so they need any kind of support they can get to be given intelligence and early warning.
His task force has put together a list of 100,000 people that they believe are eligible for evacuation to the U.S. So far, they've helped 380 people leave the country. The State Department spokesperson said the agency is assisting U.S. citizens on a case-by-case basis. They plan to help legal permanent residents and SIV holders as space allows, but they will not be assisting extended family members of U.S. citizens like Johnny.
If peace is not coming, then I want my family to be evacuated somewhere. I don't know how to find it. As a U.S. citizen, I think I do have a right to just ask the government my family's in danger.
Johnny says living here means little if his loved ones continue to be in danger. Hope Kerwin, Wisconsin Public Radio.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Hey, here's what's going on. The guest we had hoped to have at this little chunk of our show is a no-show. But the good news is we had that conversation about Aaron Rodgers, COVID, and the Packers going on. Y'all kept calling through that news feature there. So if you called and didn't get through, try again. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Your take on Rodgers. Are you still a fan? More of a fan? Less of a fan? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Jan starts us off again from La Crosse. Hi, Jan.
Hi. I'm calling because I am a huge Packer fan, and I was a fan of Aaron Rodgers, with, as the previous caller said, because of the way he handled the whole Favre leaving thing. And I've stayed a fan of Aaron Rodgers until just the last 2 weeks. I believe he lied because he specifically chose the word immunized as opposed to vaccinated. He knew exactly what he was saying because in the next sentence, he refers to his teammates as some of them have gotten vaccinated and some haven't. So he knew that he was choosing his words carefully. And he also sought an exemption from the NFL. So he knew darn well he wasn't vaccinated. And this also shows where people say, you know, when I get vaccinated or not vaccinated, it's a personal choice. It doesn't affect other people. Well, this is a perfect case of how it affected a lot of other people. And we don't know how many more of his teammates are going to come down with COVID that attended that Halloween party. And like a previous caller said, too, many of them have young children. And this could still affect some of his teammates. And obviously, his home remedy that he got from Rogan didn't work because he still got COVID anyway.
All right, Jan, just before I let you go, Sunday afternoon, Packers are playing. Rodgers is taking the snaps. Is the TV on in your house?
It's always on because I love the Packers as a team. But I am not an Aaron Rodgers fan any longer. If he leaves after this year, I'm just fine with it. Whereas I was fighting for him to come back this year.
Thanks.
But I do not like people who lie.
Jan, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Louie in Oconto. Louie, hi.
Yes, I think it just shows that Aaron can make up his own mind. And it kind of shows he's been pretty much for grabbing all the money he can. And then when it comes to Friday, blame him, blame everybody else but himself. And it kind of just shows the kind of character that he has. Always been a blamer, never accepting any responsibility.
Louis, thanks for the call. Denny, I'm sorry. I'll lean in closer there. Denny is with us in Waupaca. Denny, hi.
Yeah, I think that my take is this. Rodgers, I believe, had to test every morning prior to going into the Packer building and have a negative test to go in. Mm-hmm. And so the Packers definitely knew he wasn't vaccinated. They kept it quiet. My concern is that the message he's sending out, he definitely misled people. Whether you call it a lie, it certainly was by omission. But the message he's sending out to people that are against the vaccine is that it's okay. Well, it's okay if you're tested every single morning before you go to work and you test negative. Because as soon as you contact this and the people that are anti-vaxxers, when you are vaccinated, you're much less likely to become infected and much less likely to pass it around to the people around you. It's not just a choice about you. That's, to me, the biggest problem with this. Have a great day.
Thanks, Dan. You too. Thanks for calling in, Denny. Dan joins us next in Eau Claire. Dan, hi.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. What'd you want to bring up?
So my question is more to do with the controversy surrounding this particular issue. There's a lot of players that have tested positive, but it seems as though the outrage is more towards Rodgers. So my question would be, is it really an outrage about the fact that he tested positive, or the fact that, you know, he didn't conform to the mandate that they wanted him to conform to? Is it really about the shot, or is it about something else?
Gotcha. Dan, thanks for calling in. Time for one more quick call. Jay in Two Rivers. Jay, hi.
Good afternoon. There's been previous evidence that the money must be going to Aaron's head. And I'm really disappointed that if he didn't outright lie about getting inoculated, he certainly was misleading. But what's even more egregious than that is the whole NFL not considering to re-sign Colin Kaepernick. That gentleman has been working out 6 days a week, apparently, making himself ready. And he's just been ignored. And I think that's even worse than what Aaron did.
Jay, thanks for the call. Thanks to all of your calls. Appreciate you sharing your thoughts today. Emergency rooms around the country are swamped, many of them right now, but not just because of COVID-19. Some hospitals are reporting that patients who put off treatment for chronic conditions earlier in the pandemic are now showing up in the ER with even worse problems. It's gotten bad enough in some places that even patients who arrive by ambulance aren't guaranteed a room. One patient told Michigan Radio he went to a Lansing hospital and wound up getting a full physical exam in an ER overflow area in front of strangers. Our next guest works in an emergency room and says this is what happens when emergency department staffers lack the resources to handle so many different demands at once. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Have you had to go to the emergency room lately? What was it like? Did you see these kind of conditions, or did things go smoothly where you were? Did you have to put off care for a condition earlier in the pandemic that maybe made things worse, maybe put you in an ER situation? And on the other side of things, if you work in an emergency room, what kind of things are you seeing? What do you want people to understand about what's going on in ERs today? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Lisa Moreno is president of the Milwaukee-based American Academy of Emergency Medicine. She's a professor of emergency medicine at Louisiana State University Health Sciences Center, New Orleans. Dr. Moreno, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. This is a topic that's really important, and I'm glad you're exploring it.
How would you describe what's happening in especially some of the hardest hit emergency departments right about now?
So a lot of stuff is going on. We are seeing a rise in COVID in a lot of major cities. This is sort of a pandemic of the unvaccinated, this current wave that's taking place. But we're also seeing a lot of the patients that you described in your introduction. These are individuals who have chronic conditions like COPD, diabetes, congestive heart failure, hypertension, and these individuals were afraid to come to the emergency department in the middle of the COVID pandemic, especially at a time when we didn't have vaccinations. Couple that with the fact that their private doctor's offices were closed, that the clinics were closed. And so these individuals stayed home and their chronic conditions became worse. In some cases, they were not able to get prescription refills because of the fact that their doctor's offices or clinics were closed. They're coming into us now and they are very sick, and we are under-resourced. We have had staff cuts, and so we are less able to take care of them than we were before.
People who work in emergency rooms through COVID, I mean, we've been hearing again and again concerns for their morale, the staff in hospitals, emergency rooms in particular. This has been grinding on for a long time now. Now this new problem with overcrowded emergency rooms, are we losing people? Are people just going to leave the emergency medicine profession?
Well, you know, that's more common among nurses than it is among physicians, but even physicians are considering leaving the field. We definitely are suffering from poor morale. we were called heroes during the midst of the pandemic. And I have a bumper sticker, and a lot of other people do, saying, don't call me a hero, just give me what I need to do my job. And that's sort of what the problem is. We are under-resourced. When the COVID pandemic hit, obviously most of our, especially urban emergency departments, were really crowded, but then we saw a decrease in our census. And that was because people weren't coming, as we've already established, because they were afraid to come and they were holding out unless they were in extremis. So the census was down and hospitals started cutting staff. Less doctors on every shift, less nurses on every shift, closing inpatient beds upstairs. And I will tell you that in my mind, that's poor planning. It may have been a good business decision so that the hospital would not lose money, but it was poor planning from a medical and a service standpoint, because now we're seeing all of these patients showing up and they're very sick, and we have less doctors and less nurses working in the emergency department. These patients are waiting longer to be seen. As you said, people are coming in an ambulance and not getting a bed. They're waiting 45 minutes on an ambulance stretcher before they can get into a bed. I have examined people in waiting rooms. I have examined people in lounges. I have pulled people out of the waiting room and just examined them in the hallway to try to be able to get people out more quickly who are not severely ill. And when patients are admitted, they are staying in the emergency department. We call that boarding. They are boarders in our department when they've actually been admitted to an inpatient service. But because the hospital has cut staff, a lot of the beds upstairs on the inpatient unit are closed because there are no nurses to staff those beds. And so the patient just stays in the emergency department, sometimes for 48 hours, 72 hours, until eventually a bed opens upstairs for them to be able to occupy. And patients don't get as good care when they're boarders in the emergency department because the docs who are responsible for their care are actually upstairs on the inpatient unit. And we, the emergency department physicians, technically are no longer responsible for their care. Certainly we'll help out if the nurse tells us there's, you know, an emergency going on with those patients. But our focus is on the guys in the waiting room, the patients in the waiting room who are trying to get in and get stabilized and get their emergency care.
Talking to Dr. Lisa Moreno, president of the American Academy of Emergency Medicine, emergency physician at the Louisiana State University Health Sciences Center in New Orleans, looking at overcrowding now in many hospitals, at emergency rooms and hospitals around the country. You can join in if you have an experience to share as a patient or family member. Have you seen things working well in your local emergency department, or have you seen this crowding? If you work in emergency rooms, what are you seeing? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. Moreno, what kind of solutions are you looking for? I mean, it seems like it would be expensive to maintain a lot of capacity in emergency rooms when we don't need it, but then when we do need it, that's obviously creating a lot of problems. As you've been pointing out, what kind of solutions do you want to see?
Well, I think, and a lot of my colleagues share this opinion, I think that medicine has to be run less like a business and more like a service to our public, to the taxpayers in this country, to the people that are supporting the medical system in this country. When you run medicine like a business, you are not going to be prepared for a disaster. You are going to be prepared for the status quo. When you run medicine like a service, you have to be prepared for a disaster. As we know, when we look at what goes on in the world today, there are tsunamis, there are earthquakes, there are floods, there are forest fires, there are mass shootings, and there are unexpected epidemics and pandemics like happened with COVID. We know this happened with Ebola in the past. We know that we've had other H2N1. We've had other pandemics, not so much pandemics, but epidemics in the past. When you run a service organization, when you have to provide medical care for patients, you have to be ready for the unexpected. As emergency physicians, we have no idea if we are going to get, you know, 7 patients from a multi-car collision, all of whom are severely injured. We have to be ready for that. We have to have all the equipment and the staff and the personnel to be able to handle that. So you can't necessarily just staff for day-to-day operations in an emergency department. You have to be prepared for emergencies. That's kind of the definition of what we do.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Lisa is with us in Burlington. Lisa, hi.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to bring up, I just absolutely echo everything of the person that is speaking right now as an emergency department nurse. I wanted to bring up that I think what I'm seeing a lot of is moral distress in the staff, because many of us that went into this, you know, field came into it because we're empathetic, because we care about people. And what we have been doing for the past couple of years and what we're seeing is causing a huge amount of moral distress. And some people are just leaving the profession because of that.
Lisa, do you feel like there's support out you for you on that? Is there somebody you could turn to and talk about what sounds traumatic? I don't want to throw that word around lightly. Do you have somewhere you can go and talk about this stuff, you and your colleagues?
Yes, I do believe that they do offer us, you know, places that we can have support for that. But the fact is, you're still going in and you're doing it every day, or, you know, 40 plus hours a week. And how do you undo that, you know, like frequently? So it's difficult, even for people that have high emotional intelligence.
Lisa, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that experience. Dr. Moreno, I assume you've seen that in your own ER.
Absolutely. And I am commending that nurse for calling in and talking about the moral injury that we do sustain. Part of the problem is that we still stigmatize any kind of mental distress. We still stigmatize people because they stand up and say, I need help. And we are the healers. And as the nurse knows, you know, she is running around taking care of multiple individuals who need help. She is seen as somebody who is a problem solver and a fixer, and somebody who remedies the distress of other people. She is not seen as somebody who could possibly have distress of her own. And this is what we're experiencing as healthcare professionals, to stand up and say, I need help, often is perceived as weakness. And as she said, you sustain this moral injury by seeing people suffering in a way that you cannot relieve when you are used to seeing that. We're seeing people in distress. We're seeing people waiting a long time to get upstairs to an inpatient bed, or in from the waiting room into an emergency department bed. And then we feel helpless to be able to fix the situation. We go home, and then we go back the next day to the exact same situation with no change. So yeah, it's great to have somebody to talk to about it. But if it never changes, then you just sustain the same moral injury the next day. So how would it be if you cut your hand, and then, you know, you go home, somebody puts a Band-Aid on it, and the next day you go back and the wound is ripped open again. It's very difficult to go in and sustain that kind of moral injury on a daily basis. And many of us feel helpless to change the situation.
Thanks again for calling and sharing that story. We're talking about emergency rooms, why they've become overcrowded, especially during the pandemic. Dr. Lisa Moreno is with us, president of the American Academy of Emergency Medicine, professor of emergency medicine at Louisiana State University Health Sciences Center in New Orleans. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have an experience that you can share with us from working in an ER, or being a patient or a caregiver for someone going to an emergency room? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're talking about crowded emergency rooms in the U.S. Hospitals, many of them around the country, say their ERs are stretched to the limit with COVID and non-COVID patients. Many people who may have delayed treatment for chronic conditions that have gotten worse during the pandemic. Dr. Lisa Moreno stays with us, president of the American Academy of Emergency Medicine, professor of emergency medicine at Louisiana State University Health Sciences Center, New Orleans. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, questions, or experiences. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Jane is with us in Stevens Point. Jane, hi.
Hi. So in my experience, one of the huge overcrowding reasons is that there are so many people now coming to the ER for non-emergency situations. I think we're just in a we want to fix things now, society now. So if we think we have an STD, we're going to the ER. If our kid has a sniffle, we want to get antibiotics going right away, and the list goes on. And part of the reason also is that a lot of people also don't have primary care providers, so they turn to the ER as their primary care.
Jane, thanks a lot for bringing that up. Dr. Moreno, is that something you've seen?
Absolutely. So it is true that many people come to the emergency department for non-emergencies, but I hesitate to be critical of them. And the reason is that very often people don't realize that they don't have an emergency. They're frightened by the feeling that they're experiencing, the chest pain that they're having, the dizziness that they're having, or their symptoms have been going on for a long time and they haven't been able to get the primary care that they need because, as I said earlier, offices have been closed, doctors' practices have been closed, clinics have been closed, and even with things slowly reopening, individuals who are underinsured or uninsured or live in areas that are under-resourced and don't have access to good public transportation have a very hard time establishing ongoing primary care. And we are totally aware of the fact that we are the nation's doctor. Emergency physicians are the nation's doctors, and we take care of the vulnerable and the disenfranchised patients who are unable to get primary care. That's another gap that really needs to be filled. But again, if we continue to look at medicine as a business, then we are not encouraging clinics to take patients who are underinsured or uninsured.
Jane, thanks a lot for that call. We'll go now to Adam on the line in La Crosse. Adam, hi.
Hi. In addition to the issue of the administration of these clinics and hospitals running them as a business, which is a serious issue, on the other side of that, a good friend of mine works in one of the local hospitals here and tells me that it's become an aspect or a reflection of the political situation in the country. Many of the patients that come in to the emergency room or the hospital actually are quite abusive towards the medical personnel, and it's a reflection of the lack of belief in science and medicine as a reflection of science, and you have this thing of people just not believing that they have COVID or that they're actually that sick from COVID, and other aspects of ignorance leading to abusive behavior towards the hospital personnel.
Adam, thanks for that call. I've heard of that anecdotally. Dr. Moreno, is that something you've seen or heard from your colleagues around the country?
So, and I do, being president of AAM, I do have access to information from physicians all over the United States, and I would never deny to you that abuse of healthcare professionals takes place. It does take place, but it's not as common as you think. And often people are what someone may term abusive because they're frightened or they're frustrated. They don't quite know what is going on with them. And that's a scary place to be. The other thing, though, that the caller references is the political situation. And the political situation is extremely distressing to physicians. We do not understand how COVID and masking and vaccines have become politicized. The science is very, very clear. And when our citizens have role models, leaders, elected officials who stand up and say that COVID isn't real or that it's not necessary to wear a mask or who refuse to wear masks in public, you know, whatever you know or don't know about science, it's pretty logical that if I put a barrier over my mouth and my nose and I'm not spewing saliva and respiratory particles onto the person next to me, that that prevents disease. I mean, you don't have to be a scientist to know that. But elected officials continue to insist that masking is an issue of personal rights, that masking is related to whether you're Republican or Democrat. We as physicians are extremely distressed that our legislators are doing this, are engaging in this kind of behavior, and it's not helping the people who elected them. It's not helping their constituents. As the caller said, it's causing more problems. It's making more people sick.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Derek now in La Crosse. Derek, hello.
So I had a question about, is there something that we could do to take the pressure off of our healthcare workers, like more money or supplies, or, you know, put up a temporary clinic or something like that?
Derek, thanks for the call. Yeah, apart from the long-term suggestion you had, Dr. Moreno, of more of a service model than business, is there something in the short run that could help emergency rooms like yours?
Absolutely. I would love it if every single person in this country would contact their legislators and let them know that you support your healthcare workers. We're not asking for more money. We're not asking for, you know, we just want enough physicians and enough nurses working in our hospitals to be able to serve the patients that we need to take care of. We want to have enough supplies readily available to us to be able to take care of the patients who come in and see us. Just last night, I had a patient who needed a simple procedure performed, and it took 2 hours to get the piece of equipment that I needed because the hospital is understaffed. We couldn't find a nurse would know what the piece of equipment I needed was, but the central supply staff didn't. It was very frustrating. Let your legislators know that they need to support physicians and nurses who are serving the public in this country. Let them know that you also don't want to see masking and vaccines politicized. I know that our elected officials listen to their constituents. And I think if constituents would speak up and say that, and I would love constituents to also speak up and tell their legislators that they believe that healthcare is a human right. Every human being is entitled to medical care when they need it.
And Dr. Moreno, that's all the time we have. Thanks for joining us today. Dr. Lisa Moreno is the president of the American Academy of Emergency Medicine. She joined us for a look at crowded emergency rooms around the country.